Hey, this is Darrell Revis, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hi, Corey. How you doing? Summer is almost upon us here. Can you believe it?
Is summer not here yet? Have we not officially declared it summer? I mean, it's like I view summer as the point when I can no longer drive without air conditioning.
That's a good point. Yeah. So here in Virginia, that was about 3 months ago. So yeah, and I'm wearing shorts every day, all day every day. So
I feel so terrible for you.
But anyway, there's some other guys in shorts that we should probably
there
be
are
about, right.
The boys of summer are not just for baseball, although we do have an awesome new baseball podcast for you Mets fans there to make sure to check out Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs. You may remember him, know him as an SNY Mets reporter. He'll profile Mets second baseman Neil Walker, share some great insight on the Walker family connection to Roberto Clemente, the former Pittsburgh Pirates great. And also remember that for all of SNY.TV's original podcasts, you can find that. You can find this one. You can find all the other ones, the Rangers, Islanders, all those great podcasts on the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. So remember to listen to the most recent version of Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs, where Steve talks to Neil Walker, along with this podcast on the SNY.TV audio network. And please make sure to rate and review the channel so that other people can find the Gelbs podcast, the Jets podcast, the Rangers podcast, all those great things, and get to experience all the wonderful content that that we have here at SNY. And speaking of wonderful content, we have had a murderer's row of guests lately. Brian Costello, the long-awaited appearance of Kimberly Martin on the show, and now we welcome back an old friend of the show, a familiar face to SNY viewers and Jets podcast listeners, Eric Coleman, former Jets safety, current SNY analyst, joins us on the phone. Eric, thanks for taking time out of your day.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing well. We are better now that you are here, Eric. I guess we have a lot to talk about. Minicamp is officially wrapped up. The next time we will see the Jets players on the field will be training camp. But the big news in the locker room and in the pages of the New York Post right now is Muhammad Wilkerson's contract stalemate. He spoke to the Post on Wednesday night and essentially said he feels like the Jets don't want him or don't value him. So I'm curious, as someone who has been in a locker room, who has been in the Jets locker room, how does a situation like this unfold for you as a teammate? What is the mindset for you guys? And how does this change how you view the front office as a whole?
Well, you know, it can definitely have a negative effect on the team. You know, everyone looks at, you know, you look at guys like Muhammad Wilkerson as a leader on the team, a guy who does things right and who's always done things right. And when you see a guy like that, you know, not get a contract, feel undervalued, it kind of makes you look at yourself and say, you know, if I do things the right way, am I going to get rewarded or is it going to be a negative? So, you know, I think in that aspect it can be negative on the team. But at the end of the day, these are all professionals. They're going to handle their business. They're going to prepare for a season with or without Muhammad. But, you know, ultimately they would really like to have Muhammad on that team.
Yeah. I mean, as a guy who's played defense and has played, you know, in a number of systems for a number of different teams, you know, when you look at this team, you know, with or without Muhammad Wilkerson, obviously, you know, he's a difference maker. He might not be as, you know, flashy as a player as, you know, some of the other guys that the Jets have, but you know, his presence, if he's not there on the field, I think everybody expects he will play out this year and then see where next year goes. But just thinking maybe a year from now, if you remove him from this equation, does it change anything on this Todd Bowles defense, or no, the beat will go on, or this is just an irreplaceable guy? Like, where does he kind of fall on that spectrum?
Well, I mean, it definitely changes how your defense is played. Muhammad is a guy, he's a high-energy guy. He's a leader on the defense. He kind of sets the tone for that defense. And, you know, although there are some other great players on the defensive line, they all look up to Muhammad for that energy, for that motivation, for that confidence. So, you know, a team without Muhammad Wilkerson, yes, they will move on, you know, as they do, as teams do in the NFL. You know, no team is alike any given year. They'll move on, but, you know, it'll definitely be a hole in the defense where Muhammad was.
Eric, I'm curious. We'll flip sides of the ball, and then we have a bit of a I'll let you know. We have a bit of an anti-Ryan Fitzpatrick ban on or a Ryan Fitzpatrick ban on the podcast at the moment.
We're
anti-story, and we're tired of talking about it, and I don't know if you saw this because it happened right before we jumped on, but Coach Bowles even said during his presser, I'm done talking about this. The exact words he used were, I'm done. I'm not going to talk about this anymore until Ryan shows up in the door. So I don't want to ask you specifically about Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I would be remiss if I don't ask you about the situation of being in a locker room that's divided in a general sense between a young quarterback and an old quarterback. This was something that was broached a lot on Twitter on Wednesday among fans. The idea that there are players in the locker room who are on the younger side who see 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years left in their career and maybe see the higher upside of a younger quarterback, and the guys who are maybe looking down the barrel at maybe 1, 2, 3 seasons left and see a guy that also has 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe less seasons left at the game's most important position. Where does the divide happen? I know these guys are professionals, but I'm just curious for your thoughts on that general topic of young versus old when it comes to quarterbacks.
Well, I've been on both sides of the spectrum on this. You know, I played on the Jets team with Chad Pennington where he got hurt and Vinny Testaverde came and filled in, came out of retirement. And also when I went to Atlanta, I played with the rookie quarterback in Matt Ryan. So I think it's all based on the individual player. Because, when you look at an older guy, yes, he may be a veteran, maybe he has playoff experience, but that doesn't mean that he's going to do a better job than a guy who's younger. With Matt Ryan, when I signed with Atlanta, he was a rookie. He came in and was very effective immediately, did a great job for us, and we had all the confidence in the world in Matt. But, on the opposite spectrum, there's some times where you have a veteran quarterback who's maybe he's been paid a lot of money, where he's guaranteed, so he's going to play. But he doesn't have the skill set as a young guy. So, as a player, as a veteran on the team, I don't think it matters as much if the player is a veteran or they're young as much as it is the skill set. And are they going to harm the team or are they going to put the team in the best position to win?
I'm just curious, let's say you're on one side of the fence of this argument and the guy in the locker, in the locker next to you is on the other side of the argument, does it ever really manifest or people just kind of hold their tongues, or do you guys talk to each other about you're wrong because of this or you're right because, or I'm right because of that? Like do you, when you were in the locker room in those kind of, fluid situations, does that get brought up among two safeties or a safety and a defensive lineman or a safety and a running back or that sort of thing?
Yeah, it absolutely does. There are politics in the locker room as well. You look at guys in position battles and, one group might say, I think this guy should be the quarterback, and, another group thinks the other way. And that does happen. Those arguments happen and those conversations happen behind closed doors. But at the end of the day, when you go out there as a player, you're worried about yourself, you're worried about your livelihood, so you want to make sure that you're doing your job and you're not really as much as concerned about who else is out there. You're trying to make sure that you do your job because you want to keep your job and make your career last and help the team win and make as much money as you can while you're playing. So those conversations do happen, but I don't think they're as heated as people think they are.
That's totally reasonable. Eric, one of the things we've been doing on this show for the past few weeks, and I think something we're going to continue to do going forward, is we talk a little football off the top, and then we kind of talk about some other stuff, and we like to get guests that are specific or have different mindsets and viewpoints and life experience. We had Brian Costello of the New York Post talk about the newspaper industry and journalism with social media. We talked to Kimberly Martin last week about race. We talked about women, women's roles in sports. We talked about athletes as activists. And one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on this week is, as a former player, you have a lot of insight as to what happens when the lights go off, when someone walks away, but also what happens on the field. So I guess we'll start with what happens when you're in the league and mini camp ends and you have 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is, until you have to report to training camp. What is the first thing you do? And at what point do you start like really gearing up, diving back into the playbook, diving back into the gym for training camp?
Well, Well, you know, right after minicamp ends and you have that long break before training camp, I would typically go on vacation. That would be the time where I would, you know, go out of town with my family, do something that I've been waiting to do all year, enjoy the nice weather. Once about, you know, 3 to 4 weeks out of training camp, I would usually go down to Florida, to North Miami, and start training very hard. Start getting ready for the season, getting your body in condition, getting ready for, you know, for the elements. You know, going down to Florida and training in the summertime, you're pretty much ready for any weather in training camp. So that's when you start really putting in the work and laying the foundation for training camp. You know, you don't let yourself, when you're on vacation, you don't let yourself go. You still exercise and keep yourself in a little bit of shape. But once you get about 3 weeks out, you're hitting it hard and you're getting ready to get into training camp in full swing.
What was one of your favorite, like, post mini camp vacations? Where was one place you went, like, between mini camp and training camp that you'll look back on and always remember, like, man, that place was awesome, or that trip was awesome, or it was just like a great, like, way to clear my mind between those two periods?
Well, you know, I remember one trip in particular. My wife is Sicilian, so we went back to Italy with my family, and we had one daughter at the time. And it was right before training camp. We went and saw some of her family, had a great vacation. I was able to get away from football. I was able to get away from my phone, from the internet. And it was really just a time to really relax. And it was just one of the best vacations I've ever had. And it was kind of funny because I was over in Italy, and the first week I was in Venice, and I was at the pool, and I saw this big guy in the pool. And I'm like, who is this guy? He's like really big. And it was Sean O'Hare. from the Giants. And I was like, what's up? You know, I ran into him. And then, like, 3 days later, we were in Rome. And I was walking on the steps, you know, like the famous steps. And I was taking a picture with my wife. And at the time, I played for Atlanta. And I see this big guy, another big guy walk by. And it was Mike Mularkey, who was my offensive coordinator at the time.
Now the coach of the Titans, right?
Yeah, so I ran into Mike. And then we were in Sicily. And I'm at the breakfast bar of our hotel in Taormina. And I'm grabbing some eggs or something from the buffet, and I look next to me, and Jason Garrett is standing next to me. We just had a random conversation, but it was funny because anywhere in America I wouldn't run into three NFL players or three people in the NFL. But when I was in Sicily on that vacation, I ran into three NFL coaches and players.
So long story short, fans, if you're listening this now and you want to do some stargazing for NFL players, go to Italy immediately and just walk around monuments until you see them, or at the buffet getting eggs.
Exactly.
That's awesome. One of the things I know about you, you talk about staying in shape. I remember, Eric, one of the first stories, I started this like blog about the Jets like in the year you were a rookie, when you and Jonathan Villeman, those guys, when you guys were all rookies. And I remember one of the first stories reading about you was you were big into yoga, doing yoga. I mean, this is, you know, 11, 12 years ago, whatever it is now, and thinking like, wow, that's really interesting. But then, you know, remembering hearing when I was a kid, I can't remember, was it Lynn Swan or someone did ballet to, you know, and seeming like yoga is a chick thing and this guy is doing it. Do you still do yoga or kind of, you know, other types of, you know, kind of more out there exercises to stay in shape? Did you do that throughout your whole career? And if you did, like, what was the benefit of that?
Well, you know, I try to do as much as I can. I don't get around to it as much. Now I'm into more, like, I do spin class, and I'll do, like, kickboxing one-on-one, you know, just to get my cardio and keep in shape. But as a player, the thing that yoga did for me was allowed me to learn how to stretch. One, and it helped me recover. You know, we don't spend a lot of time stretching. We spend most of our time lifting weights and getting strong and being explosive, but just calming your body down and stretching really helped out with pulled muscles and everything, but also just the breathing aspect of it. When you get hyped up, when you get, you know, in those environments, say you get hurt, you tend to tense up, and yoga helped me calm down in different situations, so it really transitioned over to the field. But as far as now, I'm a big spin class guy. Usually there's like three or four guys, but most of the time it's women in the class and kickboxing as well, just to keep my body in shape, keep my mind sharp.
Do you ever see Sean O'Hara in a spin class?
Never. No. I've never seen him in a spin class. No, that would be a sight.
That would be quite a sight. You know, it's, Eric, it's interesting that you bring up yoga because the story, and we'll dip a little bit back into Jets football because I think it's relevant, is Dee Milner talked about bringing up or taking up yoga this offseason. He's obviously dealt with a lot of injury issues, and I know that the Jets instituted at their facility, and he was one of several players to do it. It's just, you know, I think that, and I don't even know if this is a question more than it's a statement, but I think that there are a lot of interesting ways in which athletes can train their bodies and mostly help recover. I think, like you said, that athletes in general focus, or we as a public focus a lot on athletes, you know, benching and curling and squatting and not necessarily recovering and stretching and learning how to treat your hamstrings and treat your quads, especially for someone like a defensive back who's constantly adjusting on the fly, who's constantly jumping from one spot to another, who's making a lot of sudden movements in a game in which you're essentially can be going 90 degrees one way and have to stop on a dime and go another. Is there anything that's out there now that you wish you would have done or wish was more prevalent when you played in the league?
Something out there now. You know, I will, like I mentioned before, I'm a big spin guy, and that really helps with your endurance. You know, with your lung, your conditioning, and it's a way that you can condition yourself and not put the pounding on your body. I wish that was around. I wish it was around, but I wish it was as popular as it is now. Yeah. When I was playing. That's one thing. You know, maybe a little bit of CrossFit in the off season just to get in shape. I think that could have helped me. You know, there's some extremists out there that, you know, that you'd probably get hurt doing the things that they do in the real CrossFit. But, you know, just taking a little bit of that and a little bit of spin class, I think that probably would have helped me as well.
Yeah, it's interesting how, you know, the science. I had heard something recently or saw an article, I think last year, about like Steph Curry, you know, like basically they kind of taught him to like walk in a new way. They used, you know, kind of science and all the, you know, ergonomics or whatever you call it to basically figure out you're getting injured with your lower body. And if you retrain how you walk, like that will help you stay from getting injured. And that's obviously, you know, his career has, you know, just catapulted. So yeah, that's interesting how quickly in the last 10 years the science around this stuff has quickly evolved. I'm curious, Eric, I know you're from Washington State, right? Like Spokane, is that right? Okay, so where do you lay your head at night? Like are you in the New York, New Jersey area? Are you in the Atlanta area? Are you in Washington? Like, you know, where is your family? And I mean, I know work takes you to New York, but are you in that area all the time, or, you know, do you have to travel to go home?
Well, yeah, I'm in New York. I'm in Long Island, New York, out east by Stony Brook. And the way I ended up out here is I met my wife when I was playing with the Jets. And,
oh, you know, right, when the facility was on Long Island, yeah.
Yes, exactly. We practiced at Hofstra out there. So I lived there, met my wife. Then, you know, we started having children. And, you know, as I mentioned, she's Sicilian, so she's really big in the family. So, you know, we keep our family here and very close-knit group, and I love it out here now. I call myself a New Yorker. My wife always gives me a hard time because I tell people I'm from the West Coast, but I'm definitely a New Yorker now.
So how was that, like, when you were playing in Atlanta or Detroit or wherever, like, would you basically have to get another pad and you would just kind of go there and then you'd come home whenever you could and back and forth, or and she would just kind of stay with the family on Long Island? I'm just curious, as someone who's thinking about, like, you know, looking for new jobs and stuff and I might move me to another city, like, how does that dynamic work, or how did it work for your family?
Well, for my family, when I was in Atlanta, we actually, that's when we got married. I moved to Atlanta, we bought a house there. But, you know, whenever we had free time, whenever we had the off season or time off, we would go back up to New York and stay with her parents at her parents' house. So that was always big. But once I started playing in Detroit and my career started winding down, that's when I built my house in New York. So we would always have somewhere to go. You know, I think my second to last year in Detroit, I had a big injury. I was on injured reserve. And so I was spending a lot of time going back and forth to New York. So it was nice to have a house back there. And we rented an apartment in Detroit.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a reasonable approach, I feel like. Instead of the, hey, I'm just going to buy this new apartment or this new house for this place that I'm going to be in for maybe 6 months or 2 years. You know, you mentioned Detroit. You mentioned your career winding down and you know, making decisions about the future. At what point in your NFL career did you start looking at the future? Did you start thinking, okay, whether it's media, whether it's investing, whether whatever it may be, I need to have a plan, and that plan may need to be in place a lot sooner than I expect?
Well, when I was in Atlanta, first of all, when I was at Washington State, my degree was in general studies with an emphasis in communications. So it was something that I've always, kind of been drawn to, is broadcasting. But when I was in Atlanta, my wife kind of talked me in and helped me to get an internship with the local NBC affiliate in Atlanta. So I would spend my days off, working, sitting in the studio, learning how to sit in a, at a desk, how to look at the camera. I would learn all the different nuances of being a broadcaster. And as I started to wind down, it was nice because, I had a show when I was in Atlanta. I would interview my teammates. It kind of prepared me for the analysis part of broadcasting. But when I broke my leg in Detroit, that was kind of the time where I started looking at, what am I going to do after football? That's when we built our house in New York and started laying down some roots and started thinking about my options and what I can do, all the while trying to focus on getting better and becoming a better football player and making my career last.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool. And I think, right, that's one of the things I think that so many players, right, struggle with, that transition. Some of the guys, that you have played with over the course of your career who might similarly be out. What's one of the more interesting guys that you've played with who now has transitioned into something that you'd said, gee, I know he played, middle linebacker or whatever, but now he's doing this crazy thing. Like, is there anything that sticks out to you that you think is kind of cool or, fun that someone else is doing?
Well, before I go into that, I will say that transitioning, no matter how well prepared you are, transitioning out of the game is very tough. I went through about 6 months of just being depressed. Didn't want to do anything. Didn't want to leave the house, and it was a tough time because you grow up your whole life playing football. You're a professional football player, and then all of a sudden you're not good enough to play anymore, or you're not playing anymore. So that's a very tough time, and it's you need a lot of support for that. But within that, I had a group of about five friends who I played college with. We all played in the NFL, and we kind of be a support system for one another. And one of my friends is Marcus Trufant, who is a cornerback, pro bowler, first-round pick for the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Great player, great career. He started doing all kinds of stuff when he's winding his career down. He invested in mini storage units, and now he owns a bunch of mini storage units. He's doing a great job. He also owns like a car detailing company where they go to different malls and they detail your cars while you're shopping. This guy is doing everything. I think he owns a casino now, and he's doing very well for himself. So I would say Marcus is probably the guy who, you look at Marcus, he's a very passive guy, and you would never know that he has all these businesses going for himself, and he's probably making more money than he did playing right now.
That's awesome, right? And I think that's so important, having that group of guys, right, that you can go to and are going to kind of keep you accountable and keep you on track and, encourage you and keep pushing you, even when you don't want to hear it. That's really cool.
Eric, I have one question, then I have a couple of silly ones that I want to ask you, but I'll ask you the serious one first. As a former player turned broadcaster, there was a slide that leaked from Broadcast Bootcamp this year, the thing that the NFL annually puts on with their broadcast partners and with current and former players who are looking to get into the TV side of things. And there was a slide that said it was – I'm screwing up the ratios, but it was something along the lines of, TV is 80% how you look, 17% how you speak, and 3% what you say. And I think that as a fan, as someone who didn't play and someone who looks in the game and looks at players in a quasi-critical way, I think it feels that way a lot of the time, too, for us. I personally lament that there aren't, like you, and there are some really smart guys out there, but I think that they get overshadowed by people who just wear nice suits and yell at the TV or say simple platitudes or won't call out their former friends or current friends. Is that something that you think is ingrained at the point of broadcast boot camp? Is that something you saw when you went through that, if you did go through that? And what do you think the solution to that is?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't go through broadcast boot camp, but, you know, as I watch, you know, different analysts and people, different personalities on television, you know, it does have a lot to do with things other than the information that you're presenting. You know, a lot of times, you know, you see people get jobs just because of what they've done on the field, or, you know, they're loud and they're, you know, they're outrageous and how they present themselves. And, you know, it's tough, you know, because especially for a guy who's mellow, but I feel like I have a lot of information to give, you know, a lot of knowledge of the game.
I would agree.
Yeah. Still waters run deep, Eric.
Yeah.
We're very much the same like that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's tough, but, you know, at the end of the day, that people, if it's not genuine, if it's not real, then it's going to fizzle out and the cream will always rise to the top. So, you know, I know for myself, I'm just going to continue to try to get better and work on my weaknesses and become the best I can be.
No, that's well said. All right, so now the silly questions. I keep promising to come up with other silly questions, but I have two. I actually added a third one that is also food related. The more you come on the show, you will understand that 87% of my life revolves around what other people are eating, what I'm eating, or what I'm planning to eat next. So we'll get to the food part, but first I'm going to tweak this a little bit. I've been asking the last two Jets writers that we had on if there was another member of the Jets beat crew that they had to be stuck on an island with. Who would it be? I'm not going to ask you to choose among them, but I am going to ask if there's another SNY analyst, whether it's a former player, whether it's a TV host, that you had to be stuck on a desert island with. Who would it be and why?
Oh, if I had to be stuck on a desert island, I would say... I would say Michelle Yu, and because she's a great cook. You know, every time you walk into SNY, she has like a fresh dish, you know, that she's warming up, or, you know, she makes pies for people all the time during the holidays. And, you know, I'm a guy who needs to eat, so it'd probably be Michelle.
You want to be friends with the person who brings in the pies, the homemade pies during the holiday season. You always exactly. want to be friends with that person. All right, so speaking of pies, what is the one food that you love to eat now or that you maybe picked up eating after you retired that you would have never touched during your playing career because you just would have said, I can't do that to my body?
the one food, you know, it's funny because I eat better now than I did when I played. And
you're expending less calories now, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not working out as much. So from now that I probably wouldn't eat. I mean, it's kind of a backwards thing, but like probably broccoli raab or something like that. Like I would never imagine myself eating that, and I love it now.
It's the Sicilian wife.
Yeah, but
cooking broccoli raab well is really hard.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I don't cook it, but I'm a connoisseur, so I've tasted the good and the bad.
Yeah, that really, really bitter, overcooked, burnt stuff is just, oh, no. All right, last one, and then we'll let you get on with your day. If you had a last meal, and it had to be either tacos or pizza, which would you choose?
I'm going to go with tacos.
Yes,
I grew up on the West Coast, and I'm originally from Sacramento, so you know I have a lot of Mexican influence over there. But I mean, I feel like there's so much you can do with tacos. You know,
that's the right answer. Just so you know that in Corey's brain, you have passed. You are now. He will be loyal to you till the day he dies. So well done, Eric.
I appreciate that.
Last question. Well, a follow up on that. Do you have a favorite taco spot in the New York area?
In the New York area, no, I have not found a taco spot. Every time I go home, I complain about I don't have like a really good Mexican place in New York.
Eric, we need to touch base. I can give you some spots in New York and awesome. In Brooklyn and in Queens, that and Jersey as well. So maybe when you're on your way back from Florham Park or to Florham Park, I can give you some spots that'll make. They're not quite West Coast tacos, you know. They're not LA or San Diego tacos, but they're good.
Okay. I appreciate that. I'm forever grateful for that knowledge because I need a good taco spot.
All right, we'll touch base. I'll have your people call my people.
And we'll sounds good.
Find a way. Eric, thank you so much. We really appreciate You're joining us. So I don't want fans to forget this. I think we had to mention off the top, but Eric, you're going to be we're going to be airing a one-on-one interview with Jets safety Marcus Gilchrist on the next Jets Nation Sunday, June 26, 7 p.m. on SNY. Fans, please don't miss that. Eric, before we let you go, is there one thing you'd like fans to tease fans with about that interview with Marcus?
It was a very insightful interview. You know, it's one safety talking to another, and you know, as I said at the beginning of the interview, not too many people know what it's like to play with the pressure of knowing if you make a mistake, then you're giving up a touchdown, and the whole world knows about it. So, it was a safety to safety conversation.
Good. I'm excited to watch it. Sunday. Remember, that's Sunday, June 26th at 7 p.m. on SNY and the next Jets Nation. Make sure that you watch Eric Coleman on Jets Nation. Make sure you follow him on all the requisite social media channels. Make sure you check in with him. If you have a taco recommendation, let him know. Eric, thank you very much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Thank you, guys, and you have a great one as well.
Eric is one of our favorites here. He was one of my favorite players when he played. I was sad when he left for Atlanta. I know that was a choice of the head coach at the time. Let's just put it that way. Even though I don't necessarily agree with it.
What's he doing these days?
It's a good question there, Brian. It's a good question. We want to thank Eric for joining us, and make sure you guys check out that interview with Marcus Gilchrist, because I think safety is one of the more interesting positions, and having a safety and safety talking about it is going to be super fascinating. Brian, I want to thank you for joining me as well. Guys, make sure you follow Brian on Twitter. He is at Brian_Bassett.
And Corey, I want to thank you. That was a great interview. Well done. Insightful questions. You can follow Corey at CoreyGriffinNBC on Twitter.
And folks, make sure if you like this podcast, along with other SNY's podcasts, to check out the SNY.TV audio network, rate and review it, let people know about it. Let people know about the Jets Blog podcast. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all those wonderful places. Just search SNY.TV Jets or the Jets Blog podcast. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. Let us know what you think. Until next time, folks, keep calm and jet on.
Safety dads.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.